You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours, like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more, made to order just the way you like it. Tim Horton's new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Hey, y'all. Spooky season is here. And if you're looking for a show to whet your appetite for a little haunted history, then I'd like to invite you to check out Southern Gothic, a chart-topping history podcast that explores some of the most infamous legends, folklore, ghost stories, and hauntings of the American South. We've covered all sorts of stuff from the Bell Witch of Tennessee to the disappearance of the Confederate submarine, the H.L. Hunley, not to mention our deep dives into the local lore of some of America's oldest and most haunted cities, like New Orleans, Charleston, and St. Augustine. So, if you're ready for a little good old-fashioned Halloween storytelling with a commitment to quality historical research, then be sure to check out Southern Gothic today. It's available now on all your favorite podcast apps.
Monster House presents.
Monster Talk is supported by listeners like you. Find out how you can contribute via Patreon or with reviews at monstertalk.org/support. Your contributions, large or small, make a huge difference. Thanks.
In Search Of has investigated the mystery of many ancient monuments, the pyramids, Stonehenge, and Easter Island. A solution to these puzzles may be concealed in Florida's Coral Castle. This monumental structure was created by one man with his bare hands in the 20th century. What strange forces created this castle of secrets?
It's actually quite unlike anything we've ever seen before.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
In Loch Ness, a 24-mile-long bottomless lake in the highlands of Scotland, it's a creature known as the Loch Ness Monster.
Monster Talk.
Welcome to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
It's 2021, and I've been trying to get some of our backlog of Monster Talk live shows out to you. But this is our first episode recorded in 2021. This year's already shaping up to be a kind of continuation of 2020 in some ways, but there are signs that science and medicine are making dents in this pandemic. Karen and I wish you a happy new year. And to get things started, we're visiting a topic that she's researched very deeply and that she loves very much. And that's the legends around the structure in southern Florida known as Coral Castle. It was featured in the fifth season of the Leonard Nimoy-hosted series In Search Of in an episode titled The Castle of Secrets. Billy Idol wrote one of his more popular songs after being inspired by the site and the story of its purpose. The site's made of limestone, but it soaks up conjecture like a sponge. But that's enough preamble. Let's get into the
Monster Talk.
Well, Happy New Year, guys.
Yeah, Happy New Year. I guess it's still early enough into the new year.
In my world, it's only like the third day of the new year, so it's very exciting. I've just been too anxious to really enjoy myself. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. It's been a stressful half a month already. That's for sure. Yeah, I guess we'll get straight into it. So we're going to be talking about Coral Castle today. And I think we've talked about this topic here and there for various reasons. We haven't done a complete show.
No, we haven't. Yet. Yeah. And I especially wanted to talk about it because I know it's of all the paranormal mysteries, it's one that you've done a lot of work on and seem to really love. So, and
yeah, it's been almost, one of my favorites.
Almost exactly a year ago, I finally got to go see it myself, although it really...
That's right.
That was like one of the last things we did before the shutdown. Yeah. So it really feels like it just happened. It was like the last interesting thing I did.
And it is actually closed now to the public too. So it's normally open to the public. But we're joined today by Matthew Baxter as well.
Welcome back, Matthew.
Thank you so much. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Good, good. And we should add to that, if our listeners haven't checked it out yet, that we have a Monster Talk YouTube channel and that Matt has been very instrumental in helping us to build the channel with his Ask a Paranormal Investigator videos, which
That's right.
Have been very popular too, where he invites everyone to send in videos, footage of claims of ghosts and psychics and whatever interesting, strange thing you come across. And I think he's already done about 22 videos so far.
25.
Wow.
25.
If listeners want to send you something, what's the best way to do that?
Well, on askaparanormalinvestigator.com, they can use the contact form, or they can do it through the Monster Talk Facebook group. Or the Ask a Paranormal Investigator Facebook page, or they can throw a rock at me. It really doesn't matter. I'll listen to all of it. Or they can just comment in the comments on the Ask a Paranormal Investigator videos. The last one I did was on EVPs, and I just want to say that there is not a five-year-old child sitting here with me, and nobody is going to hear any five-year-old sounds coming through. And if they do, it's just paranormal.
A ghost. Thank you for that warning. I think I can already hear the ghost.
So I guess to get started, what is Coral Castle?
That wasn't its original name. So originally it was named Rockgate Park by the creator, whose name is Edward, usually known as Ed Leeds Scanlon. And so it is a rock sculpture park that is currently located in Homestead in Florida. So it's, I think, about halfway between Miami and the Florida Keys. And so it is, yeah, a really interesting park of these carved rocks. And so the new owners renamed the place Coral Castle because the rock isn't actually coral and it's not actually a castle either, so that's just a bit of a gimmick. Neither a coral nor a castle.
Talk amongst yourselves, right?
Or anything like that, yeah. But I think that the three of us have had an interest in this topic. Now, Matt hasn't been to Coral Castle yet, so hopefully one day. He's certainly been around that area and to Florida a number of times.
I've driven by Coral Castle on a few occasions. Once was on a quest to get to Hollywood, Florida, so I could buy a guitar, so I didn't have time for that stuff when I was 18. It's definitely interested me a lot, and reading Karen's writings on it, and of course the first time I was exposed, I think it probably goes the same for all three of us, was In Search Of.
Yes, yeah. So I have written about this topic, as Blake has mentioned, for a number of journals and magazines, and it also comprises a chapter of Haunting America, my book, which is available on Amazon.
And well worth the read. I really like it. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. In the book, I like to start by telling the folklore and then to come in and tell the facts behind the folklore, which is essentially what we're going to do right now.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good approach. I think explain, because if you don't explain why there's a mystery. Otherwise, I kept thinking it'd be fun to have a book series called Explained Mysteries, but you kind of have to tell why it's a mystery before you can explain it, right? So,
well, absolutely, and then that gives you a grounding to come in and debunk if you have to. But I first heard about Coral Castle from In Search Of, as Matt said, and that was the episode Castle of Secrets, and I think I was maybe about Matt said he was 18 years old and didn't have time for this kind of thing. Well, I was about 8. And I was just fascinated by this place. And certainly it was the way that the show was woven. It really seemed like a great mystery to me. And I think that that was your first contact with the story too, wasn't it, Blake?
I believe so. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It does show up in a lot of paranormal books too. And I've lost track of what I've read and when, but yeah, absolutely.
And we can go into that a little bit later, because Coral Castle really does feature in a lot of popular culture for good reason. So I guess we give a little bit of background about the history of Coral Castle. And so it all begins with Edward Leedskalnin, and he was born in Latvia in 1887. So the story is always tied in with an apparent love interest of his, and she's given different names in different books and different articles. Usually she's known as Agnes, sometimes Agnes Scuffs, which to me doesn't sound very Latvian or Lettish at all. Scuffs just sounds kind of English. But there are different spellings of her name. There's another book too in which she's listed as, I think, Hermoine or Hermine. Again, there are lots of different variations, but this claim is that Agnes was his love interest, a sweet 16, he called her. She was 16, and apparently he was about 26, in his 20s, around that age. So one story is that she jilted him at the altar, or that she wasn't interested in him. She rebuffed him in some way, and so that sent him to America, to the land of opportunity. So he went to North America. He traveled around North America. He started in Canada, and then he traveled around the United States working, and we'll get into that a little bit later as well. But he lived in New Jersey and Texas and Washington and Oregon and California. And unfortunately, then in the 1920s, he developed tuberculosis. And as we know from talking about places like Waverly Hills Sanatorium, it wasn't known at that point that it was a bacterial infection. So you had a lot of different theories about what you should do, how you should treat tuberculosis. And so a lot of people came here to Colorado because they thought a dry climate would be good. And then a lot of people went to places like Kentucky or Florida, thinking that a humid climate would be better. So Ed traveled to Florida. He went to Florida City. And so in the start of In Search of Castle of Secrets, there's a gentleman by the name of Reuben Moser, and he is just driving in the, I guess we'd call it the outback in Australia, and he comes across this little boy. He sees a boy in the distance, and as he approaches and gets closer, he discovers it's actually a very small, slight man, maybe about 90 pounds and about 5 feet tall, and he discovers that he's very sickly, and he, as people did in those days, I guess, took him into his home, and he and his wife nursed Ed back to health. And Ed had wanted to settle in that area, so he started looking for appropriate land to build a house upon. And I think that Reuben Moser was also a real estate agent, so he was assisting Ed in finding this land, and he kept rejecting all of this good quality, fertile land, and Moser didn't understand exactly what he was looking for. And Ed would say, well, I'll know what I want when I see it. So eventually he came across some land which was made of oolite limestone. And it was this bedrock was very close to the surface, not good land for farming or anything like that. But Ed wanted this land, purchased about 10 acres, and set to work building a house. So in a nutshell, he ended up spending the next 30 years building this castle, this Rockgate Park, out of oolite limestone, and creating a lot of very interesting ornamental and functional features of this park, which we can get into more detail about. But there's just there are a lot of claims about how he did this and why he did this.
Yeah. Yeah, there are. And I'd like to talk about that, because not just what the claims are, but like, I wonder how long those claims have been associated with it. Is this one of those? In your book, you talked about how, like, the Winchester Mystery House, a lot of the sort of folklore around it was constructed on purpose by the owners after the death of the owner, original owner.
That's right, the Brown family.
Yeah. Right, and so is this the same kind of thing, or did he promote these sort of strange claims? I guess we need to talk about what they are, but I'm really curious about that as we go through. How much of this was he coming up with himself, or how much was sort of rose up after he was gone?
And I do have I think a definitive answer to that question. But I think in the meantime, we should probably talk a bit more about the features. Now, Blake, being there, what did you think of the place?
Well, I don't want to spoil it. I have a very specific thought because, growing up in the South, there are places, and they're all over the country, but there's these places that you would call roadside attractions. And one of the most famous ones is a little bit north of me in Chattanooga called Rock City. And all over the country, they came up with this advertising campaign where they would like paint on barns, see Rock City. No explanation of what it is, but, you know, just Chattanooga, Tennessee. Anyway, but if you go there, you know, it's simultaneously you're going there and like you've had all these questions about it. So I was simultaneously impressed and disappointed. So it was like I have a mixture of feelings, but it was really cool to see it. And I had to keep reminding myself, I need to think about these are all made by hand. Everything here is done by hand. And
that's right.
And as far as we know, mostly done by one person. So it is an impressive thing. It's not impressive like a skyscraper, but it's darned impressive when you see, because like one of the things you see when you get there, you mentioned he was a slight fellow. There's like a life-size picture of him. He was tiny. He was like 5 feet tall. And little. He was just a little guy.
Well, Matt's been watching a lot of videos with me about the topic, and we just thought it was interesting how he is portrayed as being 5 feet tall. In other sources, he's 5 feet six tall. In other sources, he's 5 feet 10 tall. And then sometimes he's portrayed as being 80 pounds or 90 pounds or 100 pounds, even 120 pounds. So I'm wondering if that is an accurate representation of his size.
Yeah. Now, what is interesting to me is my mother-in-law was born in Latvia. So she speaks Latvian and, you know, came across during World War II and moved into New York. And so my wife grew up with a family where Latvian was, you know, very commonly spoken. She doesn't speak Latin. We could say labrit, which is like good morning. My mother-in-law was pretty excited that we were going to stop here because she lived in Miami for a while and was familiar with this place. But her father, stepfather, his name was Paul, and he was from Latvia, and he was maybe 5 foot two. So when I saw the actual pictures of Ed, I was like, wow. I know exactly what it's like to be next to a short statured, but very creative Latvian, because he came here and built his own house. And like, you know, I just felt a lot of weird kinship to this guy. And I was impressed with what he had accomplished. But I was just fascinated that anybody could look at this and think it was paranormal, because nothing came across as paranormal to me, but except for people telling stories about it. So. But again, we really haven't talked about what the features are, so we really should.
And the representation of it, and Matt has been with me to the Winchester Mystery House, and certainly get that same thing around San Jose, around California. Go and see the Winchester Mystery House, and they don't tell you too much about what's mysterious about it. So there is a lot of marketing involved with these kinds of things. But I think I didn't see any marketing in Florida, and I've been there a number of times. I've been to Miami and Fort Lauderdale. When I was affiliated with the James Randi Educational Foundation still, and no one really knew anything about Coral Castle. No one really, all the locals didn't really talk about it. And so I just thought that was interesting, but it's to a lot of people, a very special place and a very interesting place of wonder and mystery. The place in general is smaller than you would think. Again, you think about a castle and you think of this magnificent large place. And I guess it reminds me a little bit of the Alamo. It's smaller than you imagine it to be. I guess it's just larger than life historically.
What the Alamo? What is that? Sorry, I couldn't remember. That was the joke.
So the place is rather small, but there are a lot of features there, and I guess it's kind of an outside house, in a sense. He has this tower, and that's where he lived.
Yeah,
he
like had a bed like that a was made keep. From a yeah.
Yes, yes. And he had a bed that he made from harness, and he just had a lot of he kept tools in there as well. But the rest of the park is really outside, and you've got all different kinds of things. There's a table that's shaped like Florida. He was quite patriotic. And you have a bedroom with these beds all carved from stone. He had about 25 rocking chairs. So we'll get to this a bit later as well. But he had a lot of rocking chairs, and he liked people to test them out. So everything was functional in that sense. And he had a moon fountain, and he had a wall of planets. So the moon, and he had crescent moons and Saturn and other planets. He had a sundial and a telescope. And I think one of the most popular features and well-known features is the 9-ton gate. And it was said that a child could swing this gate open. It was just built so perfectly, the physics of it. And
yeah.
It's a very, very large block of stone. And I think that that's where we start to get into a lot of the myths and legends. How did he move these rocks? Because they range from about 1 ton, 1 to 3 tons, up to 30 tons. So one of the stones is 30 tons.
Yeah.
And I think these are what short tons. So a little bit, it would be a little bit lighter than 30 actual tons today, but still extremely heavy. So the question is, well, how did he build this park? How did he move these rocks by himself, especially if he was this slight 100-pound little Latvian guy?
Exactly. I would say that is the key thing here, is that everything here is built out of stone. This is like the Flintstones, like you know, how they have things like they look modern, but they're made out of rock. That's literally like everything there is made out of this limestone. And So we can definitely put some pictures in the show notes. I took Kathleen takes better pictures than I do. My wife took a bunch of pictures while we were there. So I'm sure you have pictures too. So
Yeah. I think with the palm trees there and the plants, everything's very green. It's very, very pretty, and it does come up well in photography, but it looks a lot bigger than it is. And people have said it's the 8th wonder of the world, and that it's America's Stonehenge, and have compared it to the Taj Mahal and the Great Pyramids, and that's just not the case in terms of size.
No, not really. No, it is a little bit underwhelming if you've only read the hype. Yeah, but again, I had a very pleasant time there. I think it's worth stopping to visit. And much like when we went to Area 51, we went to Rachel. We came, we saw, we dropped several hundred dollars on tchotchkes. So I've got like the Coral Castle library over here of all the, I bought the book bundle and all kinds of stuff. But
yeah, and I think that it's nice to keep these places open because they are privately owned, and sure, the owners have come in and they've created a lot of these mysteries. And again, we'll talk about that soon. But I do think that just being able to keep this place open and to preserve it is an important thing. So throwing them a little bit of money to keep it going is good.
Now, one thing, if you're an engineer type person, it is interesting. We have near my house here, we have the Etowah Mounds, which are a part of the mound builder culture. And they are big sort of earthworks pyramids here in Georgia. But near the mounds is a big trench that served as kind of a moat, but it's also where all the earth was excavated to make the mounds. And similarly, there's a sort of a moat around Coral Castle, and that moat is where he pulled all his stone. So I think it's kind of neat how he, as he was pulling out the material to make this stuff, he was also creating another feature for the park. A quick editorial insert. While I referred to them as moats during this interview, that is only by analogy. The quarry pits are outside the walls of the structure, and they're protected by a gate, but they are not full of water, and they don't turn the park into a kind of small island or anything like that. But the visual similarity is there, to the extent that hearing them called moats is quite common. But they are just the limestone quarry site.
Yeah, yeah. So the quarry is still there. And we need to add too that he moved the entire Rockgate Park at one point. And there's a lot of speculation about why he did that, but a number of years, he started building it in the early 1920s, and in the late 1920s, he decided to move the entire park about 10 miles away. And so again, there are a lot of theories come into play about how was he able to move this entire park, and why did he do this? And so I guess we'll go into some of the theories. So the myths and the legends of Coral Castle. So a lot of people say, look, he could not have possibly built this by himself, that he might have enlisted the help of aliens, or that he was an alien himself, that he couldn't have possibly done this without modern machinery like cranes and laser drills. And there's a quote that's attributed to him as well. A lot of quotes are attributed to him. And one is that he discovered the secrets of the pyramids. So it's also said that he used harmonic sound waves to build the park, or that he used electromagnetic force, that he had built the park on ley lines. So one of the theories is that when he moved the park 10 miles, it was because he was off course for the ley lines, and so he needed to relocate to be positioned precisely on the ley lines. So, and one of the most popular theories is that he used levitation. And it's said that he always worked at night, and that he worked when no one was around. So he deliberately avoided having anyone watch him. And if you watch In Search Of, there's a section where some people are watching him, and he realizes that they're watching him. He's about to levitate this large rock, and as soon as he sees them, he just stops what he's doing. And so that was what people would say. I mean, the thing I like about the episode of In Search Of is that they interview people who were around when he was still alive. So I don't know if you remember that, but there was a woman and a fellow, and they were kids at the time, but they knew him and they'd spoken with him. And so they attested to the fact that he was a very private man and that he worked by himself. And so I think that part of the story is really blown up, that he didn't want anyone to see what he was doing because he was levitating rocks, or there's another theory about him using Tibetan monk techniques to levitate the stones. And so other people said that he used crystals or a vortex. So there are all these different kinds of theories. So again, you just have people claiming that he either had superhuman strength, or he levitated the rocks, or he had assistance from aliens, or he used electromagnetic forces. But no one seems to really be giving him credit in building the place. And I think that's where Matt kind of comes into play, because he's got an interesting personal tale that I think can assist us to explain exactly what was happening with Coral Castle.
I'm just listening with such excitement and depression at the same time, because there's two things. One, I haven't been there. You know, like I said, the first time I drove by the place, I was about 18. I had heard about it before then. And I can't remember if this was also maybe in that Time Life series of books. I can't quite recall if it was, but I know that I was familiar with the place when I was pretty young. And of course, at that age, I was completely taken in by the mysticism of it.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, to hear that, you know, the place is a lot smaller and a bit underwhelming. Okay, well, now I don't know if I want to go. And then on top of that, you know, we've gotten kind of far into the show, and I don't think I've heard a single pun.
I personally don't believe it was supernatural. I put it all down to edgenuity. So, yeah.
There we go. Thank you. Okay, now I can continue.
Thank you. You caused that.
You know, one of the things that Ed always liked to say, if this is, you know, I believe this is probably one of the few quotes that he actually did say, is it's easy if you know how. And I do kind of believe that, because a lot of the things he did, I did recognize. When I was probably about 15, I actually had to help doing some logging in northern Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And spent several summers doing logging, and got to see. Now, that was one of the things that Ed did in Canada. is he was a lumberjack.
Oh, nice. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Now, and you think something so, about that job informs how to move heavy things?
Yeah, it's a possibility.
Just a little.
We used to have something called a lifting tripod or a lifting hoist.
Yeah.
And then, the chain, and you see that clearly in a lot of the pictures of Coral Castle being built. And then the hoist, all the chains, is called a block and tackle hoist. Or more simply, it's called a chain pull or a chain hoist. And it really, really increases your ability, and it uses gears. Because we all know, like when we talk about a 10-speed bicycle or a car, that gears is what gives it the torque to be able to either, you know, get out of a hole that you're stuck in, or to climb a hill, or to go really fast on a straightaway. It all depends on how the gears are set up. Mm-hmm. And that's what this block and tackle hoist does, is you pull on this one chain and you pull really easily and fast, and it gives a torque to be able to lift from, you know, the gear interchange. And so he was able to lift up to 30 tons pretty easily.
Sorry to interrupt, but sure. Matt said that Ed had worked as a lumberjack in Canada. Now, when he worked across the United States, or back in Latvia, he'd worked as a stonemason, and he'd continued using those skills. And
so Masonic secrets are in play here, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, that's yet another theory. But he used to carve tombstones in Latvia, and he did a lot of that kind of hands-on work throughout the United States too. So it's not, you know, when we talk about in previous episodes, we've talked about how animals decompose, and how if we don't work in farming, the average person just isn't exposed to these kinds of occurrences in
right.
nature. And I think that there's something similar that's going on here with Coral Castle, in that we don't, a lot of these, using these simple machines, these kinds of skills have been lost for the average person. We just don't use these kinds of things. We haven't been taught these kinds of things. And so we're unfamiliar with them. And so we attribute this kind of a creation to paranormal activity or super mm-hmm. supernatural activity, because we're just unfamiliar with these basic principles that people used to use it at that time.
So I think what we're saying here,
I was going to say
less psychics, more physics.
I don't know. I'm not going to say it was aliens, but.
Well, he was from Latvia.
Too.
Just legal aliens, right?
True.
And I think that's a good introduction to another part of this supposed mystery. There is this strange number that appears on one of the stone sculptures. And that number is 7129-610-5195. So it's said that this number is the secret to the universe, and there are lots of different theories about it. It's the golden ratio, or it's the angle on which the Great Pyramid is formed. And because the number 51 appears in there too, that was the year 1951 when Ed died, so that he had predicted his date of death.
It's also Agnes's phone number. Is that important? What?
And there are stories too that after he had built this park, and he would continue to talk about his Sweet 16, and one day his Sweet 16 would arrive, and he'd get very wistful about her. And again, we don't know if she really existed, or if she was some kind of figment of his imagination, or an ideal woman. But there were stories that journalists had gone to Latvia and they'd tracked her down, and they said, why don't you come to the United States and see this beautiful castle that Ed has built for you? And she said, look, I wasn't interested then, and I'm still not interested. So right. I think a lot of these things.
Where is it again? South Florida? No.
Yeah. But anyway, this number, it turns out, was his citizenship number.
Oh.
So I think the first part was his alien number. So speaking about aliens, he was an alien. And I could be misquoted, have that taken out of context. But that first number was his citizenship number. The number was his citizenship number that appears on his citizenship certificate. And apparently it was a practice at those times to position that number somewhere in case you had, ICE come around calling, wondering who you were and if you were there legitimately.
Yeah.
So, and I think he seems like he was a very proud man too. So I think he was proud to be a Latvian American, and that was another reason that he had this number out. But it's just interesting to see how people can take something so simple and obvious as that and turn it into something mystical.
Yeah, because it's a lot easier to just make up something to actually than to try to find the real answer. That's
yeah.
Well, and with that, you know, back to how the things are being moved. People look at the top of the tripod and see that black box, which is not really black, but I think black box sounds good.
Of the black and white pictures, it looks a little dark, and that's why. And I think that there's some kind of link there to a black box on an airplane. I don't know.
Well, it's, black box is supposed to hold all the answers, I guess. But the bottom line is you know, they said that this was, you know, held some sort of magnetic secret and things like that. But no, that held the tripod tips in place. And it also contained the shackle where the chain hoist was attached. That's it. That's all that black box was. And then, you know, people wanted to attribute so much to him levitating, you know, the blocks around and moving the blocks. But he used a chain ratchet and a system of rollers, basically logs, which is, ironically, similar to how the pyramids were built.
And so how the Flintstones cars worked. There's something, exactly. This is all tied together.
Yeah. Very, very Flintstones, with this whole thing. It's really easy to move things around. I don't want to say easy, but it's very
– it's easier. You're magnifying your force through the magic of physics.
Logs.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is none of this is impossible just for a human to do it.
Sorry, another important point to make is that he didn't do this overnight. He built – Rockgate Park over a period of almost 30 years. And this was his life's work. This was his passion. And he was an artist in creating this place. A little eccentric for sure, but he was absolutely an artist. And he did this his entire life, devoted his life to building this place.
Hello, I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
Each week on Chinwag, we dig into the weird topics you wonder about, that you care about, the stuff none of us are totally sure of, like the Bermuda Triangle, Mothman, consciousness, philosophy, UFOs, ghosts, or say Bigfoot.
So who's to say that there's not alien species that are Sasquatch?
Like I've seen a ghost, and I would hear something walking and breathing.
Maybe every path is right. I will accept as a premise that every path is right.
That is a face on Mars. Eyes, nose, it kind of looked like Wilson the volleyball.
Some people enjoy the waves or whatever, crashing, and I enjoy listening to a quantum physics audiobook.
I do think there are many things in the world that we just don't understand and probably won't understand.
That's our whole show.
So join us every Wednesday on all major podcast platforms and find us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at ChinwagPod and Wagon.
We've got a podcast recommendation I think will be really fun and or useful for Monster Talk listeners. I Know Dino, the big dinosaur podcast.
Studying dinosaurs can teach us about the prehistoric world, but also the world of today. For example, migration patterns of dinosaur lineages can tell us about the Earth's changing continents.
Climate models of dinosaur ecosystems help us understand global warming.
Studying dinosaur diets can help show the link between plant and animal evolution.
Talk about paleo. In many dinosaur injuries, paleopathologies are the first known occurrences of diseases.
A new episode of I Know Dino comes out every week with new dinosaur discoveries you won't hear about anywhere else. You can find I Know Dino on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And with this move as well, a lot of people will say he moved overnight. He moved everything overnight. I think it's important to mention that the move took 3 years. So he didn't do this over a weekend or over a night or something like that. It was three magical years. And I will add too that he had not completed the park when he moved the sculptures. He hadn't built everything. He hadn't built that large north wall. So he had moved a portion of what he'd built at that point and over a long period of time, and then continued to build until 1951 when he died. So it's, again, I think there's some links to the Winchester Mystery House in that this was an ongoing lifelong project.
Well, Karen, you had mentioned a little bit before about him, you know, only doing this at night. Now, when you were there, you noticed something about the place that would definitely fall in line with that.
Well, yeah, I think any Australian or Georgian or Floridian would realize that it's so bloody hot there. You don't want to be outside working on this kind of thing during the day.
There's no air conditioning. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I was there in, I think, October, and it was just stiflingly hot and humid. And people were walking around with umbrellas. I don't know if they were doing that when you were there. And everyone's sweaty and nasty, and it was just so hot. Obviously, you would want to do that kind of work at night. And so it seems like it's true that he did work at night, and he liked to read during the day and relax during the day, or to show people around the park. So that comes into another legend too, that he never worked around people, or he never had people around Rockgate Park. It was open to the public like it is today, and he charged about 10 cents per entry, and that increased to 25 cents. And I don't know what it is today. It was about $20 or something.
It's more, inflation.
Nowadays, yes.
Well, okay.
But absolutely, he worked at night because it was just very hot. And so I don't think there was anything mysterious about that. That was just climate.
Now, did he have a day job as well?
So I think what happened is that when he worked across North America, he saved money and then traveled to Florida City to regain his health and to set up a home, to build a home. And so he used that money, and then he made quite a lot of money for the time, over the years, introducing people to the place as an attraction. And so that was one of the claims too, as to why he moved Rockgate Park, is that, and they mentioned this in the Coral Castle episode of In Search Of as well, that I can't remember what term they used, heavies, a band of heavies or something like that.
It was a band of toughs.
Oh, toughs. A band of toughs. And yeah, the way that they reconstruct it too, they just kind of push him around a bit. But it seems like in reality, he was beaten up by a gang of guys who believed that.
Can't we just stay with toughs? I really like toughs.
Okay. We'll go with toughs. Very much of its time. And so they were looking for money that people believed he had on the premises. And at the time of his death, his neighbors came on the premises and brought the police in as well. And they found that he had about $3,000 located in his tower. That was money that he'd saved.
Yeah.
So it seems like he lived very frugally. He made everything. And it seems like there are claims that when he died of tuberculosis, or he died of stomach cancer. But it seems like it might have been malnutrition, that he just didn't really take good care of himself, worked very hard, and just didn't eat very much, and just saved his money. So who knows? Maybe he was saving that money to go back to Latvia, or I don't know what he was saving it for, a rainy day. Why ever people save money?
I wouldn't know, apparently.
Yeah, me either. Do we want to talk about this mysterious power source, this generator that he had?
Yes, and we also need to go into his books as well. But if you want to talk about perpetual motion machine.
Yes. So if you look at it, it looks like kind of like a big gear with some, you know, different parts in it and everything. And the stories about it are absurd.
And there are photographs of him using it too.
Yes. And really all this was a homemade AC generator. He could crank it and it would power two lights. That's all it did. But it would only power them for as long as he was cranking.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Now, Blake, I'm assuming from your military experience, because in my military experience, I had to use a little crank radio out in the field when we were, setting up certain artillery and things like that. Had to use a little crank radio to call the others, and it was, you know, pretty impressive little thing, the way it would take a charge and hold it, and that little thing was a far better version of what Ed had in his little home there.
Yeah, and we on the ship we had sound powered phones as well, so we had all kinds of cool things. So that if you know if systems went out, we could still communicate all over the ship. It was very cool. But yeah, he seemed like a tinkerer. He seemed like a he's engineer minded, and he made all kinds of really cool things within his skills. But I think you actually hit on my big insight was that the real power of Coral Castle, like the real, how did it get built? Why was it built? It was that he had built a dime receptacle out front so you could like pay a dime to come see what he had done, right? I mean, he clearly was a showman. And, people may be wondering, I mean, how is this topic in any way related to monsters? And I'd say at least one monster we've talked about on the show was the Minnesota Iceman. And we had scientists coming in and getting fooled by what was essentially a carnival gaffe in a block of ice. It was a made-up suit. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, this is a real thing. And, you know, they're finding like a classification for it. They're trying to give it a name, a Linnaeus, based science name for the species and all these other things. And if you just step back and say, well, wait a minute, they're at a carnival, paying a quarter to see a frozen block of, it's clearly a carnival gag. I mean, this is a sideshow attraction made by a guy who had some really cool skills, but was in it for, it was a business. He was making these stories that make it alluring. They all make it worth a dime to come take a look. He benefited financially from keeping it mysterious. That is not obvious in most of the books you read. I mean, it's not obvious but it's super obvious when you get there and you see there's pay a dime, see the thing, and you're not paying a dime. As you say, you're paying $20 or whatever, but.
I would agree that I think that this topic is relevant to the show because this is presented as being a mystery. And a lot of the articles say scientists are baffled. How did he do this? And a lot of stories come into play talking about aliens and UFOs. And I do want to talk about his books and another book where I think some of the legends are coming from as well. But I mean, we really have everything in this story, including Atlantis, Dr. Atlantis, and the Bermuda Triangle. But I think we should go back to his books. And so did you receive those books? Because you said you bought a lot of souvenirs there.
I've got a big bundle of all his stuff. Yeah. So
did you ever read his books?
No. I've had a year. I have literally not gotten it out of the package. It was a package deal. Like it's all bundled up in shrink wrap kind of thing. And
I had something like that too.
Yeah, but I haven't even cracked the packaging. Honest. Yeah.
I think he wrote about three books. They were really pamphlets. They were very small little booklets. And they chronicled his experiments and his theories. And one is called Mineral, Vegetable, Animal Life. And it's about magnets and his theories about magnets and magnetic currents. Another book is called Magnetic Base. And then he had a very strange one that you should look at because it's very curious. It's called The Book in Every Home. And it's really about his opinions of society and people and culture. And he shares a lot of his very quaint perspectives on relationships. And I've got a couple of quotes here that I think are interesting. He, in talking about Sweet 16, it seems in some ways as though she was this ideal that he had in his head because he writes about women in general and he says that girls should take smaller steps than boys. By taking smaller steps, the body would not jump as much up or down or swing from side to side. And then he also talks about how he always wanted a girl, but he never had one, and that he was looking for a woman who was unsoiled, the way that Mother Nature puts her out. So he had a lot of...
So he's obviously never seen tradition. Birth. What?
So he had a lot of traditional gender role ideas about how men and women should be. But his books that chronicle his experiments and theories, I shared them with a friend of mine who's a physicist, and he couldn't make sense of them at all. He said that they were really nonsensical. They weren't using legitimate or scientific terminology. So I think that his knowledge was just very he was a layperson when it came
Maybe he was an agnostic.
I think
starting to regret my request.
Yes. I think Matt might have seen, had taken a look at these books in the past, or we've read about some of the things that he's said. And
I did. And they were definitely, they were not even of their time.
Yeah.
It was very old fashioned thinking and very, you know, stuck in the mud kind of thinking. But, and same goes with his technical books. He had spent a lot of time alone. He had had a lot of people telling him how amazing he was for creating this and seemingly, you know, from mystical powers and everything. And I think he really started to believe a lot of his own ideas, you know, whimsical ideas. I think he started to give them a lot more credit than maybe he should have.
Hmm.
And we got a very bizarre set of books out of it. And when you're really bored, definitely take a look at them.
I've got a little quote from Magnetic Base if you want to hear it. So he writes, "Many of you have noticed that if you're looking with a concentrated look at someone's back while the person doesn't know it, the person's liable to get restless and look around. I've noticed sometimes that I can chase the mosquitoes away from the wall by only giving a sharp look at them."
There was nobody doing that when I was there because the mosquitoes were everywhere. What?
Yes.
But, it shouldn't be shocking that a man who works with stone and lives alone has primitive Stone Age views of the world.
Yeah. But,
Coral Castle, is an amazing feat, but not because it was mystical. It's the amazing aspect of it is because most of us would never be driven for 28 years to accomplish it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Very, very eccentric thing to do.
It is.
I also want to talk about to read a quote from a sign that's in the tool shed in his tower. And Blake, I'm sure that that's still there and you would have seen it because people will say, well, how did he do it? And when you walk around, you can see they've still got a lot of the equipment there.
Yep.
The hooks and chains and cogs and things like that, they still have them. But there's a sign when you walk in there and into the tool shed, and it says, "The most frequent question overheard here is, how did one man without assistance construct the Coral Castle? The answer is, with an uncanny knowledge of the laws of leverage and balance, engineering and sculpture, and with the aid of simple tools such as metal falls, block and tackle rollers, jacks, wedges, slings, cable ledges and chisels, and above all, infinite patience and a tremendous imagination." So it's just very curious that people will come up with all of these supernatural theories when the answer is just right in front of you.
It's not as impressive, but it takes the same kind of OCD to make the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? You have to stay focused on the thing you're obsessed with, you know? Every now and then somebody manages to take their obsession and turn it into a moneymaker, which is amazing. I mean,
sure. And another thing I think that drives the mysticism about it is all the pop culture with it. What was that movie? Was it Nude on the Moon or something?
What?
Yeah. So what? His ears perk up. So we'll talk a little bit about the pop culture. And I think one of the bits of evidence that we have for the fact that what he did was natural and not supernatural, there's a lot of photographic evidence. He had a brownie box camera and he took pictures of himself, these proud pictures of him standing beside the tripod or the things that he'd made. And there's also video footage. So the first bit of video footage that we have of Coral Castle goes back to 1944. And it was, I don't know if you've heard of this, Blake, the Person Oddity series.
No.
By Universal Pictures, and it's called The Fantastic Castle. So that might have been one of the early uses of castle in reference to Rockgate Park. But it's a very fun little video that you can watch. The quality isn't very good. One of those kind of newsreel style.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Is it kind of like a newsreel, but
yes,
human interest?
And it's goes for about 2 minutes, I think. Yeah. And
it exposes everything that he did, really.
Yeah, I think it was found in the back of a cupboard in someone's place years ago. But it has footage of him actually building the place and people watching him and people, scantily clad women in the rocking chairs. And so it's just great to see him actually building the place. And again, in the middle of the day too.
I was about to say, it's not built at night. Yeah.
I'm sure there were times that he worked during the day when maybe during winter or fall. But it's just really cool to see that photographic evidence of him building the place. And you see all of the tools and the tripods, and it's just really fun to see. But the Coral Castle has appeared in a number of other movies and TV shows. So as we've been saying a lot, it was in Search Of. It's also been on Ripley's Believe It or Not and Ancient Aliens. But it was on a number of movies that were filmed on location back in the 50s and 60s. And as Matt mentioned, one of those is Nude on the Moon. And so a friend of ours, unfortunately, introduced us to this movie. And I can't remember the plot. Do you remember the plot?
It was I can't remember, just some astronauts discovered, you know, when they went up to the moon, this little colony of naked ladies living there.
Were they playing volleyball?
Possibly.
I've never seen people naked not playing volleyball. On film, I mean, you know.
But Coral Castle also appeared in an earlier film, 1958, called The Wild Women of Wongo. And in 1966, Jimmy the Wonder Boy.
That's what they used to call me.
And I think, I think one of the most famous bits of pop culture about Coral Castle, though, is the song "Sweet 16" by Billy Idol. And if you go and look at the video, I think there are two videos. I haven't found the one that was shot on location at Coral Castle, but there was one that they filmed. Of him doing that, and so he was inspired by In Search Of to write that song, and it's a pretty ballad. Do anything for my sweet 16, and I'd do anything for a little runaway child. Gave my heart an engagement ring. She took everything I gave. Just so many people seem to know about the place, and I think because of In Search Of and Billy Idol's song. So I think, you know, there are lots of things that we could talk about, and I do want to talk about one book in particular, but I think Matt should probably touch upon some of the people who've tried to replicate aspects of Coral Castle or Stonehenge. I'm going to make mention of that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's one gentleman, his name is Wally Wallington, and I don't think he was even trying to replicate anything in terms of Coral Castle. He did make his own version of Stonehenge in his backyard, and his obsession is demonstrating how to move really big things without any modern machinery.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got some videos on YouTube. If you look up Wally Wallington or, something like Coral Castle Solved, things like that. You'll come across his stuff, and he's just this grandpa that likes to go out and do this stuff, and he'll demonstrate how easily it can be done without, you know, using modern technology. So it's kind of cool. But his name was Wally, and I actually have a family member by the name of Wally, and he lived by himself up in the mountains of Colorado. And he was able to do the darndest things. He had no electricity, no running water or anything like that from, you know, a municipal source. He kind of did his own thing. He found a spring. He dug this channel that went over to his house that he had dug or that built there. And he had a tank underneath the house that he filled from the spring. And then he would pump water up to a tank that was up on this hill. Far above the house. And then the sheer force of gravity would send the water down, and he would actually get decent water pressure, a very clean spring water. Mm-hmm. And it took him a while to do it, but he figured out how to do it. And when you think about it, it's not a big deal. But when you go into his place and you go, you know, he says, I don't have water from, you know, the city or anything. And you turn on the taps and he says, yeah, I got it from the spring down there. You're like, how did you do this? This is amazing. And he had banks of marine batteries that he would have a windmill that he had built generate the power to charge up these batteries. So at night he could try to watch a little bit of TV or things like that. He had a ham radio. Watch some nude on the moon. And it was but it was kind of fascinating how when you just leave somebody alone to figure out and solve these problems, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And they come up with these, you know, simple but ingenious solutions. You know, and when this same person has a background in a lot of these methods needed, well, it's even that much easier, such as Ed, you know, he had a background in a lot of the things he needed to be able to accomplish what he did. But I had a conversation with Brian Brushwood recently, and he was telling me how, you know, people will come up to him and ask him how a particular magic trick is done. And he would say, okay, think about it this way. You're going to go on a TV show, and you've got to make this effect happen. And you've got this amount of time, you've got this amount of budget, and you've got this much access to materials. Go. How are you going to do it? And they kind of panic for a moment, and then they go, well, I would probably do it this way. And he's thinking to himself, wow, you nailed it. You got it exactly right. But then they follow up with, but that would be stupid. So it seems like people don't trust themselves enough to just do the simplest thing.
Yeah.
We underestimate people. Yeah.
Exactly. There's no way a human being could have been responsible for that.
So I did want to just raise a book which is very popular with a lot of the paranormal crowd. And it's called Waiting for Agnes. So I'm not sure if, Blake, you're familiar with this book.
I am not.
So it's by a guy called Joe Bullard, came out maybe around 2000. And so it says it's inspired by the true story of Coral Castle, but it's actually a novel. And it even says on the front cover that it's a novel. And the book's out of print now. I think to access a secondhand copy is about $100.
Yikes.
Yeah, very expensive. But it's the book is just nuts. It links Coral Castle to so many different kinds of phenomena, from the Bermuda Triangle to Atlantis and to UFOs and aliens and even Nazis. And for that reason, it's banned at Coral Castle, so they won't even sell the book on the premises. But I think it is responsible for a lot of the myth, a lot of the myths about aliens and UFOs and just all the phenomena that seem to come together behind this story. Because a lot of people do read it as though it is fact and not a novel, as it says, a novel.
Yeah. And now that's, you said that was from 2000, right?
About 2000.
Yeah.
And the guy has just been on a lot of paranormal radio shows, you know, coast to coast. And he's treated as an authority on Coral Castle, but he's written a novel. So
I just looked it up. And it says that the original one was January 1st, 2000. So that's an interesting date. Hmm. You can get used one. If you go to Amazon, you can actually get used copies of it for around $25. The paperback is about $42.56. So if anybody wants to torture themselves with this, they can absolutely run and get it, because it is fiction. I can give you a little bit of the synopsis if you'd like.
Okay.
Sure. Okay.
Coral Castle is a historical novel blending facts, fiction, and fantasy in a fast-paced tale that includes accounts of reincarnation, time travel through dreams and UFOs. It is not a boring historical document, but told in a folksy Andy Griffith style.
There you go.
Sarah, get me Stone Temple Pilots.
This is the kind of thing I think that has really added to the legend and the lore of Coral Castle and turned it into a lot more than it really is. And so we've spoken about how very few people would be so driven and motivated to create something like this. There are a few other strange buildings. There's one, and the name escapes me right now, that's in Colorado. There's one in France. A number of strange buildings like Coral Castle that people created over their entire lives, over the course of many decades, and they just did it for whatever reason they wanted to, or whatever they were driven to do that. But the fact is that these kinds of places do exist, and it's not something that any of us would do or the average person would really do, but it is possible. And Blake, I'm sure you would have seen the sign when you go to Coral Castle and you enter the place. There's a sign at the front that says you will be seeing unusual accomplishment. And Ed actually put that sign together. And I think that that's just a nice testament to the fact that this is, he created this place and it's a huge accomplishment, but it's a human accomplishment. It wasn't created by aliens. It wasn't created by, doesn't have any links to paranormal phenomena. This is something, this is hard work. In Australia, we'd call it hard yakka, lots of hard work. I think in closing, I think all of the facts, all of the explanations are natural. They're not supernatural and everything is there. Some of the tools that he used, the fact that he talks about his accomplishments. I really do think that this is a mystery that has been created after the fact and that he was probably very proud of his work and did play up what he did. But I don't think that he was really a part of the theories of the paranormal theories and the supernatural theories. I think that, but he certainly did have some strange ideas about science.
But he knew how he did it and he knew it was different and that it was based on technology that he'd learned to master through, you know, through his life mm-hmm. and his experience. And it's just annoying that people always want to find some magic explanation instead of hard work and ingenuity to explain human accomplishment mm-hmm. that they didn't do. Right. You know, so
he certainly deserves credit as an artist for this place and for having skills that not many people have nowadays or even then.
Yeah. It would be funny if like the spouse of these ancient alien theorists, like if, you know, they decide to surprise their spouse and make dinner and the spouse comes home and is like, oh, this is delicious. Aliens made this? No, I made it. I don't think so. Just everything they do, everybody questions whether they really did. I find that highly unlikely. You know,
we literally have that conversation every night.
It is definitely an insult when it comes to
it is.
Human accomplishment and ingenuity. It's dehumanizing. I mean, these are things that humans are capable of doing and they should receive credit.
Exactly. Well, I think this was a fun way to kick off a new year of Monster Talk.
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, to look at a really classic topic that's dear to all of us.
Yeah. And thanks for joining us, Matthew.
I really appreciate you guys including me.
Yeah.
And the ghost.
And the ghost.
I still don't know what you're talking about there.
Well, I was thinking though, you know, if Ed had used a different building material, like maybe if he'd made his whole thing with flowers, we could have Floral Castle. Well, check the show notes and maybe we'll get a little video out of this as well. We'll look forward to an exciting 2021.
Monster Talk.
You've been listening to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
You just heard a roundtable discussion with special guest Matt Baxter, joining Karen and myself to talk about the handcrafted 20th century megalithic site called Coral Castle. We've put lots of photos and links in the show notes for you, so be sure and check those out. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Monster Talk. Each episode, we strive to bring you the very best in monster-related content with a focus on bringing scientific skepticism into the conversation. If you enjoy Monster Talk, we now have a variety of ways to support the show, all with convenient links at monstertalk.org/support. That's monstertalk.org/support. We have links there to our Patreon page as well as a donation button. Another great way to support the show is to buy books from our Amazon Monster Talk wish list, which directly helps us with our research. We love used books very much, so don't feel compelled to buy new ones. And we love Kindle, so we can share our digital libraries with each other. And finally, without spending any money at all, you can support us by leaving a positive review at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Positive reviews help keep us visible in iTunes, which is a great way to help us find new listeners. And please share our show on your favorite social media platforms. Monster Talk theme music is by Peach Stealing Monkeys. Thank you so much for listening.
Been a Monster House presentation.